This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
In your experience, in your field and your learnings over the years, can trauma lead to addiction?
Yes, can trauma, traumatic experience underlie addiction? Yes, of course they do. Traumatic experience and trauma experienced will disrupt somebody's life, can cause mental health conditions, can cause anxieties, can cause obsessions, can cause depression. And one of the ways of coping is through using substances or through the use of other behavioral addictions, right? It's a addiction or use of substances. They do something for us, basically. As we all know, on a low level, they relax me. On a high level, they give me energy. They do something for us. And the experience of trauma and not and that being unaddressed or unknown, of course, can come out in addictive habits and addictive processes are coping strategies to deal with that.
That is this week's guest on Over the Influence, Caro, who is from London. Caro herself has got a story to share, her own alcohol-free journey. She's a therapist and a counsellor as well. And just talking there about the link between trauma and addiction, we have got loads to get through, so let's get into the episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen. And I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening, wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey. And you know what? It doesn't matter where you are. We've spoken to so many people that listen to this podcast. Some people listen to us as sober curious. Some people are still drinking. Some people have been sober for many, many years. Some people are just beginning to dip their toe into the choppy waters of sobriety. My name's Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz. I haven't drunk alcohol for approaching 6 years, and it has been the best decision I ever made, slap bang in the middle of my 40s. It's just a gift that keeps on giving. It's not always easy, but it is always worth it. And people say to me, Sharon, how much did you drink? How bad did it get? Bad enough for me. I drank too much, too quickly, far too often. And I was only ever going to take a break, reset my entire system for 90 days, and then go back to drinking in exactly the same manner that I was used to for the best part of a couple of decades. Anyway, it all changed. And now you couldn't pay me to drink. And we sing about it week in, week out on this podcast. I don't do it on my own. My co-host, the very handsome Ben Anderson. Hello.
Well, hi. Don't you throw me. I'm blushing. Hi, I'm Ben. I'm 36. I live in Liverpool with my wife, Jem, two stepkids, Alfie and Millie, our little baby Leo. He's nearly two now. Can you believe that? It's gone really fast. And I'm over 4 years alcohol free. And you know what, Shaz? We're on the side of the mountain a few weeks back on Snowdon. And there's a group of us talking about how and why, as grown adults who should know better, we compare ourselves to other people. And it was community member Tracy that said, we can only compare ourselves to our previous selves. And I wrote that down and I put it on my
quote board.
Is that
on your quotes board?
It is. And if I compare myself now as non-drinker Ben to drinker Ben, we really are different people. You know, it's 4 years. It's a long time. And yes, I've grown up and I've had a baby and I got married and, you know, real adult life things have happened in that 4 years. But removing alcohol was the catalyst for me for just a load of really good things to happen. And I didn't have a rock bottom. I could have gone there, who knows? But I removed alcohol when I started to realise that my drinking had changed. I was drinking on stress rather than to go out and have fun. I was drinking more on my own. I was just drinking too much. And since removing it, life has just got better and better and better and better.
And who could argue with that? You can't argue with it, can you? When you say to people, yeah, life just got better, you know, people can't turn and say, well, when you start drinking again?
Go on, just have one. No, life's better without it. I don't want one. I just want none. Because for me, it's better.
I don't like that phrase, just have one.
Just have one.
One bottle? Where should we start? Anyway, we're not here to start ranting so early on in an episode. We are here to chat to this week's guest, and we've got loads to talk about. Gives us great pleasure to welcome Caro from London to the podcast. Caro, how are you doing? Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to see you all. I'm really good, thank you.
Fantastic. And you know what? We'll just start the episode by saying a big old thank you to a mutual friend of ours, Stephanie Chivers, who herself has been on the podcast because she made the introduction, didn't she?
She did, yes.
Amazing woman.
Yeah, I've known Steph for... Steph is, in fact, she's the beginning of my journey, the J word. She's pushed me off the side, so yeah. She definitely belongs here in a mention one way or the other. And I'm still working with her as well. So it's good, yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Yeah, we're really grateful that Steph put us in touch with you, Caro. So thank you so much for your time. Before we get into everything, just tell us a little bit about you. What do you do? Whereabouts are you based? What does life look like for you at the moment?
So I'm in cloudy southwest London, in just outside Wimbledon, the pauper's end of Wimbledon. Glad that is over. what do I do? I'm an addiction therapist and integrative therapist. That's what I do my day job, as well as working in sober community as I do workshops for people and if you call it educator, and so I do education. So in the sober space, if you like. And otherwise, I'm a mum of a very happy graduate. My daughter's about to graduate next week, so I'm super,
amazing.
Super excited.
Congratulations. That's so exciting,
oh my God,
isn't it?
I've done it. Well, she's done it, no. super proud. So I'm a super proud mum. And otherwise, quite happy with where I am. I said in another interview, you know, you find me running around the parks here and just liking my London life.
Brilliant. Really good stuff. As a quick aside, what's your daughter graduating in?
Psychology.
Fantastic. Ah, the apples.
Not related to mum.
Too far from the tree, does it?
Yes. Psychology and criminology. She just stepped into her first job. So yes, it's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Ah, that's really good. Proud mum moment.
Definitely. Oh, I blushed there as well.
Oh.
So, yes, definitely.
Take us back, Caro, if you wouldn't mind. And let's find out a bit about you before you became so active in the sober space and before you came alcohol-free and sober yourself. Tell us about your life prior to that.
Yeah, so that's 6 years ago. So I've got a similar number to you. So I was working in the city. I was in property management, really busy life, busy job, lots of responsibility, fast paced life. Yeah, that's what it is. Do you know what? I sat in the tube the other day. I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to do this anymore. Every day, squeezing in, and you sort of hunch over and anyway, you know, London lifestyle, intercity every morning, doing that and on a career path and that I'd chosen 10, 15 years before and so on, doing well, but also being a single mum and had been for a while. So this is going back 6 years. I'd been a single mum for a few years by then. So busy as well as stressful, lots going on, as well as social life, of course, but, you know, looking after my daughter and so on. So that was, yeah, fast paced and, oh, you know, working for the man and making life happen. When I say making life happen, that's also just going through, you know, the notion, I need to go to work, I need to pick my daughter up, I need to do that, I need to go and see friends and like this without looking left or right in my life and questioning anything I did or wanted or wished for, whatever. So it's very much, yeah, keeping my nose to the ground and just doing rather than being, if you like. And yes, all that changed one day when I decided not to drink anymore. But it's a big story. So yeah, you know, your average girl going into the city, going to work, making ends meet, having a social life, I had loads of, you know, I still have loads of friends, I've got family and so on. But I certainly was drinking a hell of a lot. And if I look back, of course, I didn't know that as I was going through. And that's why I'm also saying, you know, my nose to the ground, just going on without questioning anything, without looking of what is going on. And that was then changed.
Tell us a bit more about that then and the impacts, Carol, that drinking was having on your existence as a worker, as a mum, as somebody living a very hectic life.
Yeah. So I had, I guess it had sped up. So that, you know, looking back now, it had sped up. I think Ben mentioned that in his previous, in the previous podcast as well. At the time, I didn't realise, but it had sped up. It got more intense, more regular, and more at home as well, because I was working from home and so on, or, you know, working in the office and coming home and then having to be at home because I was looking after a child and so on. And it just became like a crutch almost, and also something to look forward to because I've worked so hard and I deserve this. And I'm going to have to carry on working and I'll drink some more. And then when I've got time off, I also deserve it. So it becomes sort of all encompassing suddenly, without necessarily, yeah, like I said, questioning it or noticing it. How it impacted, I mean, other than the hangovers and so on, it was a very, at the time, because if you imagine busy life and so on, very hectic. So that I was also that. I was very impatient. I was very snappy. I was very, get out of the way. You know, even walking through London sounds ridiculous now, but just get out of my way. Just really, yeah, fast paced, you know, and it just took so much time from me. So it was either drinking or hungover. Yeah, it was there all the time. And not every day. No, it wasn't like that. I didn't have an accident. It didn't, you know, I had my job. I didn't hit rock bottom, as, you know, as many people say. But it did take a lot of my time up, and certainly my head as well. Because if you're not, you know, the other part of that is, of course, anxiety, feeling worried. What have I done? What's next? What must I do next? And so on. So there was a lot of, yeah, time taken for me. In fact, the flip side of that is what have you gained? Time, patience, and so on.
Caro, I'm going to apologise at the start of this, because it's not every day you get to speak to an addiction therapist. You know, you are, the psychology of why we drink is something that just intrigues me massively. So I want to just quickly go back. You started off by saying, I need to do this. I need to go to work. I need to climb the career ladder. I need to see my friends. I need to. Why did you feel that need to do all these things and have such a busy life?
That's a very good question, isn't it? Because I didn't question at the time. I thought I would pay the bills, obviously. There's some practical stuff,
yeah, of course,
around that. There's also some, you know, in social circles, of course, you go out and have a drink and so on. But, and of course, it gave me something, you know, recognition as well as money and so on. But recognition, being praised in what I do, gaining more, giving something more. And, you know, and I can give more, and therefore I hold the business up, or I do well for my employer and so on. why you said psychology is interesting, isn't it? What it kept me was my purpose, or what I thought was my purpose. Mm-hmm. That's the only, without questioning it. It's like, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Nobody ever stopped me saying, wait, what are you doing?
The reason I apologise is because I am going to push you on this, Caro, and I hope you don't mind that I'm going to go there, because I think it's really interesting, because what you described in terms of your drinking and how it ramped up, it's almost, you know, this idea that we have these busy lives and stressful existences and we're striving for success, this kind of societal success, which is you'll be happy when you've got the promotion, when you've got the house, when you've got the car, that's when you're going to be happy. What you described with your drinking is that kind of, well, because of all of this going on, because of all this stuff, because I'm striving for this and because I must be here and do that and because this gives me purpose when I'm doing this and I am going to be successful and I will be recognised and praised if I, that, you know, that deserving it, drinking became almost that kind of self-medication, that kind of coping mechanism, which so many of us state as a reason as to why we drink. It's almost chicken and egg, isn't it, when you look at it that way? Because you're so busy that you're drinking to cope and to because you deserve it, as a kind of drinking as a reward.
Reward.
But then that kind of feeds back into, well, actually, when I wake up, I feel a bit under power and I've got to work harder and I've got to do this and I've got to prove that I'm... It's that vicious circle, isn't it? And I suppose if you remove all of those things that you feel like you should do, you know, if you weren't striving for this and you weren't, you know, working so hard to do that because you thought it was going to give you this, that and the other, would you still have had that link with alcohol and it being a reward? Or would, if you remove the kind of the busyness and the stress and the, would that lead to drinking less? Do you know, I'm talking to an addiction therapist here and I'm trying to sound really clever. But do you know what I mean? It's just round and round and round and round and round. And it comes back to, you know, that idea that society's telling me to be this.
I have to, yeah. I need to. But it's also self-imposed in a way. My idea of life was exactly that. So I need to keep on going through it. And I have to, I don't know, exactly that. I need to strive for the promotion, therefore work a little bit harder. And only then can I... I don't know, we'll strive for the next one. But it's certainly around round robin of what comes, and then I get the reward, and then it's the crux, and it keeps, you know, it gives me more energy, it makes me cope when I've got no energy, it makes me cope when I've gone, when I'm disappointed, it rewards me when I'm having a great day in the office, or whatever it is. It's a cycle. As well as,
because, you know, how do you define success for you now? If you're not on that kind of corporate ladder and getting the tube in every day, like what, where do you find your purpose today?
My success today is that I know I'm present fully for my daughter, for one. And not running about like a headless chicken and trying to, I don't know, tie shoelace and what have you not, and get homework done and, I don't know, falling over in the process. But I'm present. I can look her in the eye and say, I'm here for you, and I can listen and be there for her when she needs me and when we're together. I'm present to those who are around me, my friends, my family, and that is success for me. That is, I am who I am, and I take myself actually, speaking to the rat race and all of that, that was never, I could never say I'm happy with this. If you ask me at any point, no, who are you? Well, I don't know. I'm just getting there. No, I'm here right now. I am content in what I have, what I do with people, how I'm present with people, and my success is also my health, how I go on my run on Sunday. That's a thumbs up. And I do that every Sunday. That's success for me. I pitch up and I do it again. How I've connected with people I would have never. And that starts from my neighbours, would have never seen a thing of them ever. Now, I know everybody on the street now. No idea who they were because I was so busy and so I have, you know, but speaking into community, I have community, I've created that. And otherwise, you know, connections around the world, whatever, within my professional as well as sobriety, you know, or sober space. So that is success, connecting people with some, you know, where we have true conversations, where we can talk about our true selves, inner selves, what riles us, what bothers us, what makes us joyful, what brings us utter glee and joy and so on, truly, as opposed to running after something that I don't know, it takes so much more than it gives, I don't know. So success is that I'm content with who I am and content with what I give to the people around me and what they can expect from me.
I'm going to let Shaz speak in a minute. Promise, Shaz. And then we are co-hosts. I promise I'll
crack
let you.
On.
But I suppose I feel very similar to you, you know, in a kind of, you know, I was absolutely in that kind of societal success loop. And I really wanted to prove myself and, you know, yeah, I can do this and I can get that and I can go there and I can drive this. And, you know, I definitely had that in me in my 20s. I think I wonder if I had that kind of idea of, well, what does defining my own success, if I'd had, forget about the alcohol for a second, forget about it's a substance, whatever, just forget about alcohol. I just wonder if I'd had that kind of confidence earlier to define my own success rather than trying to live up to what society expects of us. I wonder if my drinking would have got to the point that it did, because I didn't have a rock bottom, but it was going one way. Do you know what I mean? It was getting worse. And I wonder if I just had the kind of sense of how I feel about myself and my life and what success is now back then, would it have even got there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm just trying to work it all out, basically. Just trying to work it out, conversation by conversation. Right, Shaz, back to you. I'm going to sit and write notes and shut up.
Don't ever do that, Ben. Don't ever do that. Carol, can we go back to 2018? At the start of this episode, we mentioned a mutual friend of ours, Steph, and I know that you went to a retreat of hers.
Yes.
If I've got this right, in the spring of 2018. And I just want to read something back to you that you shared with us, if you're happy for me to do so.
Sure.
So you say here, you broke down and then somehow flipped a switch and walked away with one promise to myself. I would not drink. I didn't say for how long or how I would go about it. I just wanted to do it. And then you go on to talk about what followed was an intense 3 months of planning every single move. Talk us through that and what that early sobriety looked like for you. Because I'm reading that and I can hear myself in that as well. Also 6 years ago, because you're like, this is going to be really hard. And I don't know if you were the same as me. You know, I had no intention of stopping drinking. It was a reset. I just wasn't going to drink for 90 days. That was it. But then it all began to change day by day. What was it like for you, Carol?
Yeah, I've had this. So I had this, something literally, there was a switch, and I later on talk about another switch, but that was a switch for me on that retreat. It was around alcohol and well-being and so on with our dear friend Steph. And something clicked in me. And I, like I said, I went off and said, I'm not going to drink. So, but with no idea of how to do that. But so I had to actually think about, okay, so what does my week look like? Again, you know, talking about this rat raising, doing, and actually realizing, whoa, this is what I do, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and then Thursday comes along and then I drink. And then on Sunday, we've got, I don't know, I've got a social event. On a Monday, I might be invited somewhere. And it, what basically, and I might be planning on, oh, I haven't had a reward enough yet, so I need to put Friday in as well. And maybe, I don't know, finish your work early or whatever. So what I needed to do, what I realized I needed to do, was to basically flip what I'd previously been planning of, that's when I'm going drinking, or that's when I'm sitting home with a glass of wine or a bottle or whatever. I needed to flip that to, that's when I'm not drinking, and create that. That sounds ridiculous now, doesn't it? 6 years on, because it's a normal. It's not a question, right? But you kind of have to like think, oh shit. So what do I actually do with my life?
It's like a chasm that needs filling. It is terrifying at first. What do I do?
And it often ended up, I'm just going to go to bed. Because for one, I hadn't slept for years. It felt like someone catching up on sleep, which isn't possible, and we know that. So yeah, I had to think forward. I had to think it through of what's going to happen on the weekend and where am I going to go, who I'm going to see. And having to also think through who are the people I'm going to see and not be drawn into, oh, just the one sort of thing. And keep myself busy, keep myself, I don't know, into the gym, keep myself walking, keep myself meeting people for brunch instead of dinner or something. And then, you know, so I had to meticulously plan. I needed to make sure so I don't trip up and suddenly find myself, oh yeah, fine, and then go somewhere and meet people and drink. So I really had to think it through, which took me by surprise, but then I got quite intrigued by it as well at the same time. And as well as being in the group at the time, Women Who Don't Drink, it became a kind of okay, this is what I'm doing. And I almost recorded back or reported back rather of this is what I'm doing. And that became a sort of almost like a motivator of what do I find next? How do I lead my life? Like I got intrigued by it as hard as it may have been. Saying no to people and invites and getting my reward, right? How do I reward myself? Oh, that's another one. How do I reward myself? What's that? What? Nothing there. So, yes, it became quite, I had to focus. I had to focus on me, what I'm doing. Which, you know, talking back to the blinkers earlier, I was like, just going without stopping. I had to focus on what I'm actually doing and who with.
Well, Carrick, could I go back to the email that you sent us before this recording? Because it's just, this is just the best advert for alcohol-free life ever. You said that you dropped a stone, stepped up at work, learned to sleep again, got fit, got to places on time, saved money, had boundless energy and time for my daughter, friends and family. I jumped out of bed in the morning, so excited to be me. I loved being sober and part of my sober clan. I felt like I'd discovered a well-kept secret of life. I mean, what a write-up. What a write-up that is. You can't get better than that, can you? And it's, you know, it, a bit like your, well, I've got to do this and I've got to be there and I've got to da-da-da. Well, that's a relentless list of just positivity. It's just wonderful to read that.
And it became, that was my experience, little by having to focus on what I was doing. But that's what I then reaped in. Yeah, I could sleep. Yeah, I could breathe. Yeah, I could remember. Yes, I was pitching up. And the joy of that. I mean, these minutiae of joy. It's like, and I can, rely on myself to pitch up. And the seeker was like, oh my God, I had no idea. This is tremendous. And there's also this, when I'm now part of the secret, so I'm just going to kept me going as well. And so this is what it takes. This is all it takes, not drink, to have, you know, clarity of thought, to have sleep, to be awake, to love life, join in.
Love it.
And you know, you're saying, you know, your life's gotten better and better over the years. And that was just the beginning.
Well, yeah.
This is the first 3 months.
Yeah, let's say. We've got a chat box going. Obviously, our community members watch this as well. Adam's just put in there, he likes you quite. I've just discovered the well-kept secret of life. So probably going on my quotes board there. Can I ask you, Adam's put a question in here. He said, did you find that going into therapy teaching helped you personally? Yourself, by helping others, did you find that helped you
to qualify as a therapist?
Yeah.
Well, it certainly helped me with in life or with my non-drinking?
In terms of, you know, by doing that and learning and, you know, with that kind of qualification in mind, did it help you personally with your own journey?
Yes, of course. Of who I am, what makes me tick, but also my what trips me up, what are my peccadilloes, what are my shadow sides, where do I, yeah, you learn, you constantly, and I still am, you know, I'm 4 years into the as a therapist, and I'm still learning about that. Absolutely, what a journey, which I couldn't have anticipated that, but I did. Yes, and it still doesn't. And, you know, as therapists, we have to work on that continuously as well. Because, and that's as a life journey, I don't think this ever ends, really. But also with from person to person, right? But how we react to one person's different than to another. How, what they might, and this is the crux as a therapist, what one person might trigger in us may not be predictable, but we kind of need to be aware of it. How one person might remind us of something, or one person, you know, brings up impatience or boredom, or, oh, it's like my mother or whatever, you know, there's some of these deep psychological processes. So yes, absolutely. Did I learn a lot about me? Yeah. And still am.
Karen, thank you. Do you mind if at this point we talk about the other side of your journey? I think we've used the J word about three or four times, haven't we, during the course of this episode? But it's so true. It's so appropriate. I echo what Adam said and what Ben said about discovering the well-kept secret of life, because it does feel that. But when you remove alcohol, life still goes on, doesn't it? And you still have to deal with all the really tough stuff that happens. So alongside your life having improved immeasurably with removing the alcohol, you had the other side of it, and to quote, you said for yourself, you sort of had to witness the dark side of alcohol addiction. Would you mind just sharing more about that with us, if you're happy to do so? Because you lost somebody that was incredibly close to you.
Yes. So this is, I'm months sober, and within that year, I lost somebody very dear to me and very close to me. Through his problems with so alcohol-related illness. And I was very close to that, obviously this person, but also observing what alcohol, what that mean when somebody gets very, very, very sick with it. And then losing somebody so close, I'd never lost anybody. He was close to me. And that was eye-opening. And I'm not sure how I would have done that had I not been not drinking. And we can't say, right? So I'm not even going to try. But it's a very heartbreaking witnessing, you know, illness and just very sad end of life. Stuff, being there very close by, being with him, being accompanying him and somebody very close in the last months of life, was eye-opening, was heartbreaking, was petrifying, and it catapulted me into reviewing my own life. And this also speaks to Ben saying, you know, what were you doing? You know, the sort of rat race and stuff. It stopped me in my tracks. It stopped me there. And then it's like, what am I doing? Why am I here? What is this life about that I'm trying to pull together? It literally stopped me dead and made me reflect, I think for the first time in my life properly, of what I'm doing and what I'm trying to, who I am and what I'm trying to do. And that experience, it was also how people reacted to death and to me and how I was around that time. You know, I took a lot of time off work and really felt into that, what that meant to me. And out came, and I listened to me, and out came from me somewhere, you know, this is the other switch I was talking about, came, maybe you can create, maybe you can contribute, maybe you can change something. Having had that journey of, you know, I can step away from alcohol, I can be without it, I'm much better, I'm this presence that I was talking to, I can be here, which is probably why I was bearing massive loss in my life better than I would have done otherwise. But also, yeah, something flipped and out came, like, I can contribute. I can do something, because it was so monumental witnessing that suffering. And I stopped and I thought about it, and that's the start of my decision to become a therapist, addiction therapist. And, you know, somehow, you know, thinking back now, somehow things fell into place, and I got, you know, I had to go back to school, I had to go back to uni, or that's what I said I would do, and I had to kind of organize that, and what does that look like, did, and also with the premise that I could, if I failed, this is actually talking to, you know, to one's dark sides. Earlier, you know, learning about oneself, like failure was a big thing. Like I would have always failed. If I failed, I could always go back to do what I've always done, right? All the rattling around and the rat race and so on. That was my promise to myself. I can always do that, but I will try. I will try to make a difference to somebody through learning, through becoming a therapist, through, yeah, bringing myself into this, and that's what happened. Oh gosh, what a journey it's been! But yeah, it was my own recognition of where my life was at and how and removing alcohol, how I slowed down and could listen, and the parallel story of losing somebody so close and the dark side of that catapulted me into a complete new life, starting from scratch in my mid-40s, starting from new into something I would have no idea whether or not I'd be of any use whatsoever, but I knew I could, and I did, and that's where I am now.
That's amazing. So sorry to hear you share that. It's really painful. So thank you for being honest and sharing that with us. We really, really appreciate it. How do you feel now, having gone through that and witnessed what you did and experienced that loss, to where you are now, to be able to help others who may find themselves in the same position for whatever reason, and maybe, I don't know, offering something more or contributing further to services that may have been lacking during your time when you were caring for somebody so dear to you?
Yeah. Somehow it was felt somewhere along lines. I don't know if it did, but I'm sure some stuff that I saw made me think that it was failed by somewhere. And you know, this is 6 years ago, and as much as the sober sobriety community has moved along, obviously by fast pace in the last 6 years or 10 years, somehow couldn't be helped. So how do I feel now in that space? I learn every day. I'm so grateful I can be with people in that. And of course, you know, there's two parts of me. One is, I'm alcohol-free and I don't drink. That's me. That's for me personally. I don't have to produce that onto anybody. That's not, it's just my own experience, as well as having seen, yes, or having experienced that tragic loss. So I'm very conscious of that. People may have different wishes in their way of changing. They come to me and having, I've got a problem with something in addiction. Abstinence may not be it, but a change in their life. So I'm grateful that I think I can feel into where people are and where they need some support, some help with where they want to get to. But I can, of course, speak from my own experience, but that doesn't always come into therapy. Sometimes you have to it's the great big debate whether or not one shares of my life in a therapeutic space. But I come with the life experience that I have, and I know I can speak to loss. I know I can speak to suffering. I know I can speak to painful experiences. And he wasn't my only loss. I was unfollowed from three other people and then over the next 2 years. So I can speak to that and can be with people in that pain. And that's, yeah, there's gratitude in that. And I can see people through it. Not always. We don't know, as a therapist, we don't always know whether or not we contribute to people's change, which is slightly frustrating sometimes, but kind of have to accept that. But often we do. And that's very rewarding. You know, go back to where's my reward? There's some reward. It's amazing. You know, when people even say, you know, what you do, and obviously I not only work in the addiction field, I do other, I work with, other conditions as well. So when people say this is important to me, this is life changing. I've had people saying, this is what you do is life changing. That makes such a difference to getting out of bed, jumping out of bed and going to work and doing what I do. And of course, speaking in the community and, you know, loving the dialogue around sober lifestyle, loving the dialogue around how people change, what drives them, how they keep themselves in that space, or when they fall off, how do they go back on? And of course the dialogue around it and the community, it's so important. And you know, the whole sober voice and how that's grown over the last, we all know, it's, you know, massive movement in the community and in the media and so on. It's so important in a country or in a world where alcohol is all encompassing. There's all that we ever know about how we celebrate and so on. So grateful to be part of that and that I can. And I have said I will contribute. I think I can. And I do.
You do.
And that makes me happy.
Thank you. Caro, I've got quite a specific question for you. It's debated a lot about addiction and the reasons people drink and the reasons they're addicted to whatever it might be. In your experience in your field and your learnings over the years, can trauma lead to addiction?
Yes, can trauma, traumatic experience underlie addiction? Yes, of course they do. Traumatic experience and trauma experienced will disrupt somebody's life, can cause mental health conditions, can cause anxieties, can cause obsessions, can cause depression. And one of the ways of coping is through using substances or through the use of other behavioral addictions, right? Addiction or use of substances, they do something for us, basically. As we all know, they either on a low level, they relax me. On a high level, they give me energy. They do something for us. And the experience of trauma and not and that being unaddressed or unknown, of course, can come out in addictive or the addictive habits and addictive processes are coping strategies to deal with that.
And on the flip side of that, in your experience of work, you can help people get through this and overcome trauma.
Yeah. So that's that's part of my, I've done trauma training, and it's part of addiction psychology training as well. But I've done further training on what trauma is, and that is often also discussed. What does one treat first? Is it the traumatic experiences, or is it the addiction? Because the addiction helps one coping with trauma, helps one being alive, going through life, or suppress you know, just one of the reasons, or suppress memories that are unbearable. So where do you start? Taking away, you know, taking alcohol, let's just say alcohol, or taking the addictive, whatever it is, shopping or porn or whatever the addiction is, let's take that away. Is life then bearable? Or do we need to find a medium ground and find, you know, do we take the substance away and see what happens? It's a very individual way of working, of course. And that's also why I was speaking to abstinence, not always the way forward, right? Because people sometimes need to keep going. If you just take it away from them, up comes overbearing anxiety that makes life impossible. So you kind of need to weigh that up. So your question was around, do I work with trauma? Yes. Do I heal trauma? Can I heal that? I can be there. I can help. I can help people understand. I can help people recognize themselves in recognize traumatic experiences, as well as recognize their trauma and what that did to them. It's as Gabor Mate says, it's not what the event or the sequence of event were, but what they do to you and your body. And that's how I do deep work with people. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's so interesting to talk to someone who's trained for years to do this, has been doing this professionally for years. It's so much comes back to the idea that we actually just really need to understand ourselves and our own wants and desires and, you know, future. You know, so much of it comes back to that, doesn't it? We talk about self-awareness a lot on this podcast, and that kind of the moment of self-awareness where you go, right, well, actually, this needs to change. But I think one of the things I'm going to take from this podcast, from what you've said, because we are coming to the end, and I know, Shaz, we've got community Zoom happening soon, so we've got to wrap it up. So I won't go on. I won't bang on for ages again. But you said earlier, you know, you're in this rat race, and that you started learning about yourself for the first time in your life when you were in your mid-40s. And it doesn't surprise me when you think about how we are taken through our life. You know, you're at school and you do the GCSEs, and then you might go on to do A-levels. And then from there, I went on to university, and then you go straight into a job, and da-da-da-da-da. It's one thing after the other. Next, next, next. That's the path. That's what you do, because that's what everyone does. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And actually, when do you have that time to just sit and go, right, who am I? What do I actually want? Do I want this? Do I think I want this? And so much of it just comes back to really, truly understanding what your desires are and what desires you think you've got, but actually they've been placed on you by other people and they're not yours at all, really. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And you haven't even stopped to ask the question.
You haven't even stopped to ask the question because no one told us to.
Right. I call it. No, exactly. And nobody told us to stop. I call it the stop and stare moment. It's like, what's going on? Yeah, to understand. And some of that is in therapy, right? Right. To understand your needs. What is it that you exactly what you need and desire, and how do you get it? And people should have, and when you take away substance, when you take away alcohol, and a lot of people talk about that, that's when they also find that or ask for it, or for the first time realize, oh, this is what life is about, and I'm going to go and get it. And that's, you know, removing of alcohol and then going after whatever it is that people want and desire.
I'm nicking the stop and stare moment. Hope that's all right. I love that. That's a great phrase.
Great,
that stop and stare moment. Love that. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Caro.
Caro, Ben's got a quotes board and he's bulging with stuff, and I can see him making notes as you were chatting during the course of this episode. It's been fascinating. Thank you so, so much. And thank you for sharing such, you know, personal parts of your life with us as well. Personal, very painful. So thank you. We really, really appreciate you taking the time to do that with us. Before you go, very quickly, if people want further information about the really important work that you do, Caro, where can they find that?
I have a website. My practice is called Sea Change. It's CEE/change.co.uk.com, sorry, whoops. And I'm on LinkedIn, so it's, I'm on LinkedIn, it's Carolina Evers Endicott on LinkedIn, or See Change Therapy is my practice.
Amazing. And just to confirm, the website is C-Change, that's CEE-Change.com. Caro,
yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And you, thank you for having me.